do the next right thing to make your marriage sing.
All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true.
Hello and welcome to the Music of Marriage, the 39th time we have done an original broadcast here with, we have here the Bob, the other half, the better half, and Evie. So it's March 1 already. That's crazy to think it's March 1. February gave us a little extra time because it cut itself short. I guess that's how it works. But anyway, last week we talked about the love triangle being not what you typically hear, but the pinnacle of the triangle being love, but supported at the base of the triangle by faith and hope. So without faith, which we just talked about, and hope, which we talked about, those two working together or bouncing off one another, any one of them, if you start on that path, which is actually a necessity according to God's word, if we're going to keep that pinnacle of the triangle, which is love, because the greatest of these is love, if we're going to keep that supported, we've got to have faith. And we played that song, You Gotta Have Faith, by, who was it, Daryl?
John Hyatt.
John Hyatt. Mm-hmm. And hope. I don't think we played a song about hope. But anyway, we enjoy picking songs that kind of reflect the general trajectory of our conversation here. And because it's the Music of Marriage. And we have a website called themusicofmarriage.com where you can see where our book there you can order called How to Make Your Marriage Sing. And then you can get downloads of some of our original music as well. Or email us. We keep saying one of these days we're going to have people call in and expand. But we've been getting our footing in the last year, just getting comfortable with the whole concept of presenting a conversation about marriage, which is a touchy, can be a touchy topic, but it's actually such a foundational topic in society. As we have said before, it was the first institution that God created, not government, not whatever other institutions there are. Otherwise, it would be a pretty disorderly world. And that's one of the reasons we're motivated to even do this show, The Music of Marriage, is because there's a lot of disorder within each of us just because of our inherent sinful nature, rebellious nature, selfish nature. And that causes disorder in our own spirit. Then that spills into our marriages and on it goes, other relationships as well. Therefore, today, we thought we would talk about God's love language. How about that? God's love language. What is the difference between our love language and God's? And what's the big attraction, anyway, to even knowing it? And what does God's love language sound like? The Bible is just an incredibly beautiful, really love song from beginning to end. And there's the verses in there, you know. He will sing, rejoice over you, and he sings over us. You know, God is a very creative, he's a really cool guy, actually. We ought to get to know him better. The more that I have read his word and just been stunned by, it's like a lightning bolt coming into my world of averageness and sameness and listening to voices around me. And he comes in and sit and I read this stuff. It's like God's love is so amazing. So the language, God's love language, comes to us through his word and through creation, when you see the things, the beautiful things blooming.
and the love of sunshine.
We're going to talk about a few characteristics of God's love and what it sounds like. And the first one is that God's love is an everlasting love. It's an eternal love. And we can never get enough of it. If something's eternal, right? Don't you, when you fall in love, say, oh, I love you. I'll love you forever. You know, you want that. And you want that, actually, that feeling that kind of does fade when reality hits you after you're first married and the real personality characteristics come forward as you deal with real life, and you can lose that. And then people think that their love is gone when they lose that feeling. And actually, the fact is that by loving the way God tells us to love each other, you actually regenerate that feeling. And of course, with age and time, we don't expect it to feel the same, just as our bodies aren't going to feel the same at 70 as they did at 17. But it's exciting to me to talk about, to take a focus on God's love language and learning to listen. Like you listen carefully to those favorite songs and press that transistor radio up to your ear so hard, even the battery's getting weak. Or whatever it is, you want to hear that music. You want to hear those words. You want to hear that song. And for our life and our love together, and for yours as well, let's press that sound up to our ear and try to really get into and grasp. I mean, we couldn't even begin to scratch the surface, but we will try.
And relive those memories, especially the memories we had when we were first married, right? And we were head over heels in love, of course, and nothing could get in the way of such passion and romance. But, you know, things do get in the way in life, and then we finally realized that, gee, you know, maybe, I you know, romance is great, but that's not all there is to this picture. There's something bigger, something greater than ourselves and our own feelings. And that is the love of God. And if you know God, then you are unified with God, and His love is made perfect in you. And it's made perfect for a reason, because God's love is perfect, first of all. Second of all, He wants our love to be perfect, like His love. And that's an ongoing process. We're not there where He is, and never will be, but the whole point is it starts with relationship with Him, and that process goes on by the power of His Spirit.
And we need His love, really. The kind of love we need to fuel our marriages and relationships is God's type of love. We can't ever really get enough of it or grasp the scope of it, but it is eternal, that we'll talk about in the first section here. And then it's relational. It's not just about making robots out of us. You know, God could have, if He was that insecure, I guess you would say, it's a weird way to think about God, but he would be, I've got to make robots and they will do everything right. They will always say loving words and kind words, and it will be so meaningful because, you know, but that's not the kind of people that we are. God's love is very dynamic and real and relational, and in that it accepts all the facets of who we are, and the understanding part is a big part of God's love, where He understands our failings.
And finally, it's exemplary, right? God's love
is
language.
And redeeming. It's redeeming and exemplary. Yeah, that's true. So
there's many facets to the diamond of pure diamond of God's love, and that's the kind of thing that is good to meditate on and fill yourself with.
So the eternal nature of God, who happens to be the very definition of love, because the Bible says anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love. So if you want to know what love is, I guess you'd kind of have to know God. Since he himself says in his word, God is love. Mm-hmm. So we've been trying to dig into this God's love language thing. What is it that he's describing to us about who he is and therefore what we should be? Well, the eternal nature of God defines his person. He always was. He never had a beginning or an end. That there should inform us as to the kind of love we would want to have in our marriages. And then he gives us specific descriptions of what his love language looks like and feels like it if we do and those things that he says, like 1 Corinthians 13, which is love is patient and kind, which we'll talk about in a minute too. So basically it's saying anyone who does not love does not know God. And I guess it's the opposite is true. Just like the Bible says, anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love. So that in our marriage, you know, we were asked a lot of times when we played our music around town, how do you do it? How do you do it? And I think, what are you talking about? And they would say, you're still married. You're still married. And that people would want to know, because they would hear us singing that we write these songs and about love and life together. And, you know, we're older than, we're not in the younger set. And so the young people would really want to know what's behind it, because we really tried to infuse in our music the concepts of love that are from God's perspective, because that's the perspective with which we began our marriage 46 plus years ago, and it's the perspective that we need to maintain to keep the music playing. Right, Bob?
That's correct.
You're supposed to say, only you would know.
Exactly.
No, just kidding.
Yes, dear.
I said it again.
There's another good response.
We're going to have to edit that one out.
That's
again, Daryl.
Accepted.
We'll try to behave ourselves and not say the wrong thing.
But, you know, talk about God's love language. Like any language, we need to break it apart and study it. How do you learn any language, right? You have to start with the basics. You know, how words are formed, the meaning of words, how they read in a sentence, the syntax, you know, and
also immersing yourself in the language. I think they have immersion courses. I remember, I forget how they were titled exactly. People would talk about, I'm taking a Spanish immersion course or something immersion course, mm-hmm. where you would just immerse yourself in the language to where you're in the culture that it comes from. Maybe you're going to go to Japan and live in Japan because you want to learn Japanese. So you want to see someone.
That's the best way to do it, is to, speak to the people who speak to that speak the language and
right.
learn their customs, because the customs are really supply the deeper meaning of the language that they use.
And so we want to immerse ourselves in God's love language. I don't know what you would call the language. It wouldn't be Japanese. It's actually every language, humanly speaking. But we're calling it God's love language. But I don't know if you could give it a name. Maybe we could come up with one.
Yes.
Sort of a universal love language that, but it's interesting because in the beginning of the Bible, when people began branching out and developing their societies and cultures, and then I guess they thought that they were pretty hot stuff and they were going to build this Tower of Babel or Babel, and Babel's kind of an appropriate word, because they all spoke one language initially in when God mm-hmm. created people. And then as they developed their cultures, they built this tower. And they actually said, well, we can be actually greater than God. We can be at least as good, if not greater. We're going to build this tower all the way to the heaven, as high as we can reach it. And somehow, I guess that was their tower of power or something. They felt, they literally thought that they could be like God in doing so. And God didn't take a shine to that too well. So they're up there. I don't know how high they were up before this happened. It'd be interesting to know if people fell off or what happened. But God suddenly gave them different languages.
So they couldn't understand each other.
So here they were like past the brick or something, and they're like, what are you saying, you know? And so God, there was so much confusion that they had to stop building their tower, or towers, whatever they were building, tower, I guess, and wound up where God wanted them to go. But speaking of languages, God has control over even, you know, so much of his creation, including us and our language. But his language was still understandable, even though we may speak different languages. Yeah. So no matter what language we speak, anyone can understand God's love language, and it's been interpreted in many, many, many languages in the world, I guess, in the scriptures. But
yeah, and one reason we need to really focus on God's love language is because it is everlasting. Jeremiah 31:13 says, I have loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore, I have continued my faithfulness to you. See, there is a connection there between love and faithfulness. Because he loves us, he's faithful to us. And interestingly, there's a verse in Proverbs that says just the opposite about man, that many a man claims to have unfailing love, but a faithful man who can find? Fascinating connection.
It almost sounds to me like many a man claims to have unfailing love, you know. Oh, I'll never stop loving you. Undying love. You know, the feelings. Mm-hmm. But faithful. Because the road will be long, and the road will get rocky.
Yeah.
And the things that come at you might challenge those feelings. And you've got to then transfer your love into actual faithfulness, which is the next section we're going to kind of talk about, is exemplary love.
Yeah.
How we live out that love. But God's love is a redeeming love, and he always puts things in a positive light. And so we are to love one another in that way. And God's love is also relational in that he didn't create us as robots. He actually, man is the pinnacle of creation. After he created light and the universe and the plants and animals and all, God wanted to have fellowship, friendship, and I mm-hmm. think fun. I really think God likes fun, and he wants us to have fun. And to me, it's not a good representation of him if you grow up in a setting where you get the idea that Christianity is just about following rules and, you know, measuring up to a certain quota of behavior, which of course is part of it. But I think we miss a lot when we forget the fun factor, because that's the joy that God gives us, joy and freedom to really, you know, express ourselves mm-hmm. and just be happy, really. Be happy in all that he's given us to enjoy.
That's right.
So that's the relational part, too, is where God is three in one himself. He's God the Father who came to redeem us. His example, Jesus, that's the Son, Jesus, and then the Holy Spirit who helps us to do the things that make marriage fun and make us recover the love that we may have lost and know how mm-hmm. to maintain it. So we have...
And to do the next right thing.
That's right, yeah. So this next song, Everlasting Love, someone very local here in Franklin was an original singer of this song, correct?
Yeah, it had two ties locally. Buzz Kaysen was the co-writer, and he was Brentwood, and he made a career off this song because a lot of people recorded it. And Robert Knight definitely has ties to Franklin. He was born here. Some of our listeners, Miss Odessa Carter, I think she's related to Robert. He went to TSU and had the big hit in '67, but Bob in '74. Your favorite version, and that was who? CC, who was that?
Carl Carlton's.
And I think Phil Collins has recorded it, a lot of folks. And you guys, since Miss Odessa probably listens, we're going to make a pledge that next time we play it, we'll play the original 67 version, maybe?
That's great. Right.
But this was the big hit in 74.
Yeah, I think that's really cool that this song originated right here. Originated right here in Franklin. That's Franklin, Middle Tennessee roots.
We're back with the Music of Marriage, and we're talking about God's love language. Now, obviously, if it's a love language that comes from God, it takes great understanding to grasp how long and high and wide and deep is the love of God, like the Apostle Paul tells us to strive to do. It's amazing stuff. And one thing God's love language is it's exemplary, and it's displayed in the person of Christ. He's our prime example. And it truly is a study in perfection, because Christ was perfect, and God's love is a perfect love, and there's no flaws in it, there's no holes in it. There's nothing we can point to, really, that where it just kind of falls apart, like our own our own versions of love, or our own small understanding,
or our fluctuating variety, like,
yes.
C.S. Lewis said, changes You know, we watch these Dick Van Dyke shows while we eat dinner with our TV trays. And our kids are out of the house, so we have the luxury of doing that.
Yeah, right.
And actually, I got some really beautiful wooden TV trays at Aldi. I don't know if they have any more, but if you want to go there,
yeah, they're gorgeous. Yeah, I think
they're
teak wood.
I don't know what kind of wood, maybe, but anyway, that's just an aside. But we sit there and watch Dick Van Dyke shows, and it's really interesting how many of them have to do with marriage relationships. Mm-hmm. And wow, the perspective back in the
mid to late 60s, when that show was.
What a world of difference that you would see today. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first of all, in the bedroom, it's twin beds, you know. They didn't even show anybody in the same bed in those marriage shows, which I appreciate, actually. We like, you know, but everything else in the show, too, relationally, it actually, in their scripts for the show, besides being very funny and
engaging. Now, you make it sound like we're Puritans, Evelyn.
No, I mean for the show. I mean, I like, and I think most people really like, the way things were a little bit more than how they have become. So those shows kind of reflect that time a little bit more, when there was maybe more carefulness and protectiveness of what marriage is or should be.
Well, and society had more of a Christian base, and it was just assumed that that's the way things are done and should be done. But today, it's been kind of blown out of the water with our sense of freedom that we have. And often, as Francis Schaeffer said, freedom, if it doesn't have a Christian base, will lead to chaos. And that's
destruction.
Destruction.
So I think even for children, you know, there was a concern about, you know, there's certain things that are appropriate or inappropriate. It seems like the goal since the 70s has been to trash any of that kind of thinking to where we are today, which is pretty wild and crazy.
One thing I did noticed about the Dick Van Dyke show is when they seem to have a bit of an argument going on or a disagreement, they always stay connected. There's never a sense that, you know, one is just pulling away or distancing themselves from the other. To be realistic, once in a while they might do that, but they always come back to center, you know, the place where they should be. And that's an important part of marriage, is no matter what's going on, to stay connected. Dick and Laura.
Rob and Laura.
I'm sorry, Rob. Dick Van Dyke's the actor. Rob and Laura in the show always kind of like sprinkle their arguments with flashes of affection and a little humor here and there, and to try to keep it from, you know, going strident on them. And it's because they love one another with an everlasting love, and they know that love is permanent, and nothing can destroy it. And so they're not about to look for ways to destroy it.
Well, they did have an argument, and Rob went out and slept. He acted like he was leaving. It turns out he slept in the car in the garage all night. So that's kind of what an everlasting love does, you know. And even with God, even if we're his child and we may get in a certain place in life and we've strayed or we're, you know, out there, that's that exemplary love language of God, is that he leaves all the sheep that are in the pen, according to Jesus, and he goes out and finds that one that's ready to fall off the cliff, stuck in a bramble bush or something, because we all stray at different times, at different degrees in our lives. And I think we all, and only we, know what those times are, and that's fine. Nobody else needs to know, but God knows, and he cares. And that exemplary love that we can imitate in our view of marriage and relationships is that you know, when someone is in trouble or when they're misbehaving, maybe they're depressed, maybe they have an addiction, things are tearing at the fabric of your relationship. Rather than just say, well, I can't handle it, there's no hope for the situation, follow that exemplary love language of God that says, you know what, guys, hey, I'll be right back, but I'm going out. I'm going after that one.
And that's
just so incredible to me that God loves people that I couldn't possibly love. How is that possible? You know,
and that's why he tells us to love one another as I have loved you. That's the example, as I have loved you. And we'll get to talk about that in the next section. But one of the, you know, curious things about love is it seems so high and above us, or almost so unreachable, unless we're just naturally loving people. But, you know, some of us have to learn how to love more than others. Some were modeled in their home how to love and how to treat other people, and others were not. And so when we marry, there's all these mixes of, you know, our shortcomings and our strengths. And the nice thing about marriage is you get to work on both of those together.
Only you would know. Whoops. I wasn't supposed
She's
to
really
say
getting
that.
Off on saying.
We asked Daryl to cut that out of the last show. Bob took me by surprise. I was just thinking my own thoughts, listening to him, and all of a sudden he threw the ball to me. So anyway.
Yeah.
But
anyway.
It's very true that marriage is kind of a catalyst for it's like a laboratory in a way for taking these immutable, unchangeable fact of life characteristics of whatever's in this test tube and whatever's in that petri dish and mixing them together and see, you know, and I think that's the fun part about God and about relationships too. That's that he gives us a lot of freedom to learn and to find our way. And he doesn't demand absolute robotic protection, perfection in order to still call us his and to still stay with us. And I think if we can move our mind and our imagination to that place where you can look at your spouse and give them freedom to fail and to grow the way God gives you and me freedom to fail and to grow over time, to work through a season in life, and have that perspective rather than, you know, oh, you're not doing X, Y, Z, and hey, time is up, you're out of here type of thing. I think we would have so much more beauty to enjoy and beauty to behold in the relationships around us rather than kind of the cut and run where it only sees the negatives and doesn't see that gem in the stone, that diamond in the rough. And that's the beauty of the example of God and his love language as well. He always puts us first. You know, when you read his word and he's talking to you, he's talking to me, he's putting you first. He's putting how does he do that? Each one of us, just like each snowflake has its own pattern. And he knows each one. He knows the hair, how many hairs have fallen out of our head, which we hope aren't too many as we get older. But, you know, that's an amazing and great love language that we can start to immerse ourselves in and really have an eternity to do so when we're with him.
Well, that's reminds me of a Shakespeare quote who said, a friend is someone who sees you as you are and still gently allows you to grow. And that's really the key. You know, we see each other as we are, imperfect, and we get on each other's case and all these, and we have disagreements, and we have character flaws, but we allow each other to gently grow because we see the bigger picture that God, as God allows us to gently grow, as he demonstrates that to us, and he's patient with us. You know, God could have taken us out at any time, but he's the prime example of patience, especially me, right? but
he's always there for us, and as we should be for each other. And it's tough when the waves are high and the boat's capsizing and you're floating around on a scrap of wood sometimes in the storm. But he is always there for us. And Bob wrote a song called I'll Be There that we will play now. And that's also on our website, themusicofmarriage.com, that you can download.
Yes.
And hopefully it'll be encouraging to you.
distant land. I'll carry you where you have gone, as far as you can go. These are just some things, yeah, you just have to know. Whoa, these are just some things. Just have to know.
We're back with the music of marriage, and we are talking about God's love language. And the third thing we wanted to mention, although there's an uncountable, you know, insurmountable, unbelievable amount of ways that God's love language can be discussed. But we talked about its eternal quality, everlasting love, and then we talked about its redeeming quality, its relational, exemplary quality. Okay. There's so many qualities, you just get confused. But anyway, exemplary, how it's displayed and how we emulate it, and then thirdly, God's love is relational in that, and it actually feels good and it sounds beautiful, like a good song. And I think that's where God wants us to live, in that happy place. You know, you say, the beach is my happy place, wherever they are. But really, heaven is our ultimate happy place, and we often talk in songs about love as, you know, you send me, or... you know, your heaven on earth, all these angelic, uplifted. When we think of how we want to express ourselves about love, it's usually something divine and ethereal and beyond, you know, cleaning the garage type of an emotion, you know.
That's not fun.
So that's how God is, you know. And he looks on the heart, but not just for our, and not on our outward performance, but he looks on the heart. And he doesn't, it's not just about performance to him, because he knows that we've got this sinful nature. So yeah. To him, the love factor is something that I think we often don't grasp because we don't meditate on it much. I think a lot of these songs help us to meditate it, like on it, like these words of this Franklin guy in the first song of Everlasting Love. He's got a lot of great true concepts in there. But the relational part of love is so important. It's not things we do. It's not like, did she do this? Does he do that? You should go on a date every Friday night. And if you miss one, then, you know, you're in the doghouse now. All the do's and don't lists that we live off of, for some reason, why do we do that? We really make our lives a lot more miserable than they need to be, for on our own selves, with our expectations that are unrealistic. We don't, and we need to enjoy life and have fun in our relationships and see the beauty. And rather than emphasize the stumbling block or the barrier or the fault, look at each other through the eyes of God and speak to each other with that language of God's love that wants relationship with us and good times. Take it away, Bob.
But God's also realistic with us because he knows our tendencies to go off on our own. And that's why Jesus said, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Now, I asked a friend of mine once what he thought that verse meant, and he replied with something very profound. He said, well, if you don't deny yourself, then taking up your cross daily and following him won't have much meaning to you. And I thought that was really, really a great statement. And that's why 1 Corinthians 13 not only tells you what love is, but what it's not. It's not arrogant or rude, doesn't insist on its own way, is not irritable or resentful, all are a bad result of not denying yourself. And see, Jesus knows this. So that's why he gives us verses like, deny yourself, take up your cross daily and follow me, because he knows unless you do that, you won't be able, you're going to do what 1 Corinthians 13 says not to do, and then you won't be able to do what it says to do. All the positives, you know, love is patient, love is kind, it rejoices with the truth, it bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Love never ends. Well, that's quite a litany of of accomplishments, and that's what love can do. See, that's the beauty of it. In fact, it's so amazing that Jesus said that love is the fulfillment of the law. You know, all the thou shalt nots. Well, love fulfills all that. Pretty much obliterates the law in one respect.
And God is love, so when we fail, right, to keep the law, to do the right thing, we might look back on our life and say, yeah, that chapter was kind of, I don't know why I did that or what I was thinking. The things, again, that we know we have not been up to par on, remember, God is love. And in our marriage, God is love, so if you want to find love, find God. Mm-hmm. And his language to us is that one that we talked about last week, hope and faith, the base of that love triangle that supports that the pinnacle, the greatest of these as being love.
And if you have a hard time finding God's love, ask him in prayer. He says, if you ask anything in my name, I will give it to you if you ask in faith. So ask believing. If you don't know God, then ask to know him by faith and put your life in his hands and trust in his sacrifice for sin for you. And you'll have a new relationship with God and be able to do the things that he requires of you. And if you do know God and you just fall short of his love all the time, it seems, like we all do, really, ask him. Ask him to help you with this, and he will.
And because God's love language is relational, again, it feels good, it sounds good, it feels right. And we know those times in our relationships where something feels a little off. Maybe we've said something or acted in a way that I might have offended them, or that was a little abrasive or harsh, or maybe it was outright warfare. In our car on the way to church, of all things, so we all know that we could take this language immersion course in God's love language. Some of the types of things that are common phrases in God's love language are things like, I forgive you, I love you, how can I help you, I'm sorry, thank you. That's okay. We'll figure it out. Sometimes the best love language is just being quiet for me. And then, Bob, you were pointing out how you noticed in Isaiah 40, where another example of God's love language, when he says, comfort my people, speak tenderly. And that Elvis song, we're going to be singing it. I mean, playing it. Love Me Tender.
Yeah.
He's not the only one whoever wrote that song. I don't know. Daryl, do you? He wasn't from Franklin, right? The guy who wrote Love Me Tender. Wasn't you.
I don't remember.
Wasn't me.
I wish.
Yeah.
But that's how God's love is. And I think Elvis knew a lot about what God's love. And anybody who's, like I've said before, really, to the any extent that we do love correctly, we're doing God's way. We're speaking God's love language. So
if God is patient and kind, he certainly has to be tender with us.
Yeah. So those are some pretty big and constant goals, I guess, to attain to. And I think the funnest thing is I think maybe it's because of my love of sports, because I was in everything I could possibly be in. And I was very scrappy. I played field hockey and basketball. And I mean, my goal was to win and get around and get through and make it happen. So I kind of, you have to believe in the impossible if you're in sports. And sometimes in field hockey, there was this one certain team we played, and this girl who was opposite me, she would get mad and frustrated if they were losing or if I was, you know, getting the ball too far. She would just whack my shins with the hockey stick, which I still have some broken blood vessels from back then. So, but I wasn't deterred. And our coach would say, in basketball, he'd say, okay, they're getting mad. That means we're going to win. They're losing control. As soon as you get mad, you know, you just keep focused. You play right. You play fair. You know, play with the right strategy. And so that competitive nature, maybe I think we can apply that to succeeding in marriage and in our hope and faith for when the love triangle, where the pinnacle of love seems to be sagging or even collapsed. And you say, you know what? I'm getting around that person. I'm going straight to God. So when somebody says to me, frankly, I see no hope for the situation, I say, well, then you don't see God, because I'm going there, buddy. Oh, well, this is permanent. This will never. And I'm like, no, it's not. Because to me, the most exciting thing is to grasp of the language of God's love is all throughout everything he's got in his word, cover to cover, is mm-hmm. victories and success stories. And he used the people that were, talk about hopeless. I mean, Paul used to go around murdering Christians. He really thought he was doing the right thing Saul, till God changed his heart, arrested him in his tracks. And he wrote half the New Testament from which we speak.
And Peter denied Christ.
So
he wrote the epistles.
Yeah, this vision of God's love, it requires that determination, really as if you're on a hockey field or basketball court or something. You're not going to let it get you down, and you're going to say, okay, now's the time to pull out the stops. Show me what you can do, God. Take this person who's an incorrigible mess in the situation that appears incorrigible and show what you can do. And God's love language is to say, yes, I will. And he looks on our heart and he wants that relationship with us. He wants us to know him so well that we know that this too can pass, that this too can be completely 180% changed, and we can win at this game through his power, thanks to that love language that gives us that hope. And
now we are going to hear from the king who always said to his piano player, who we got to know recently, I don't like when they call me the king. There's only one king, and that's Jesus.
Not too many people know that about Elvis Presley, but it rubbed him the wrong way to be called the king.
But anyway, in some respects, he was a king in his day. And Love Me Tender is what he's going to sing.
Love me tender, love me sweet, never let me go. You have made my life complete, and I love you so. Love me tender, love me true, all my dreams fulfill. For my darling, I love you, and I always will. Love me tender, love me long, take me to your heart. For it's there that I belong, and we'll never part. Love me tender, love me true, all my dreams fulfill. For my darling, I love you, and I always will. Love me tender, love me dear, tell me you are mine. I'll be yours through all the years, till the end of time. Love me tender, love me true, all my dreams fulfill. For my darling, I love you,